Greetings, comrades, and welcome to the Eastern Border. Sorry for the slow release schedule, but, sort of a pause in the front lines, together with me being interviewed for various other podcasts. I'll be on John Michael Gaudier's The Event Horizon for a very... If you listen to that show, you know that he's doing science and futurism, but we talked about the impact of war towards the sciences and the censorship in Russia and situation in Ukraine and all that stuff in a weirdly political episode of his, which happened because I was contacted by some people in the Russian Academy of Sciences, which told me about their own issues about the whole war and situation and everything. But as it was purely academical, I didn't think it was good enough to put on the show. And I thought, you know, our audiences are mostly military fans and military and political fans and everything like that, and people who are more of a Dan Carlin, you know, audience rather than a hardcore STEM audience. At least, you'll know, although we have a lot of STEM people here, obviously, as well, but as I had a message that needed to be delivered for a mostly academical audience, because, you know, I know that Avi Loeb and other respectable scientists listen to John's show, well, I went over there, and then we had a conversation, which was unusually political for that, but that's coming out soon, and I hope you'll enjoy it. Although, as that's mostly for YouTube, we had to censor some stuff out, which is funny because this is the first time when I spoke about Putin's participation in various shamanistic practices together with Shoigu, such as drinking deer blood from like the deer horns, and the fact that in Argentina they discovered, like, back in 2018, I think, those 20 tons of cocaine to be delivered to Europe. Yeah, both of those things apparently have to be censored for YouTube. So it's going to be bleeps all over the place, but yeah, that's coming out also. And then I'm going to talk to my friend Daniele Bolelli as well soon about the whole war experience on his Drunken Taoist podcast. But so far, you know, it's been a kind of a bloodline mess. It's a bloody mess, really. There have been very vicious, short, tactical battles happening constantly, but nothing much is going on the front because of the operational pause. But then again, you know, when I say nothing much is happening on the front, don't forget that I just use this in the matter of all good on the Eastern Front side. See, there are still people dying, there's a Ukrainian side being attacked by rockets and with their energy infrastructure and their water infrastructure, so there's a lot of casualties. There's a lot of day-to-day fighting, especially around Bakhmut, with neither side getting advantage, and people are dying every day. It's just that there is no major change in the front lines. There's no major movement around. So, I guess that's a part of getting used to this war, you know, because although each of these deaths that happen out there is a tragedy, well, they are, sadly, par for the course now. But that's about to change pretty soon, I think. Because the Earth is trying to gonna get frozen up. And the World Cup's about to end. Don't underplay that thing. I'm pretty sure a lot of people on the front lines are watching that as well. World Cup is the thing that, well, everywhere in the world, except the United States, apparently, you just follow no matter what you do. And I do believe that part of this operational pause should definitely be attributed to that. However, this does not mean I don't have news for you. Because, well, some of them are clearly weirder than others. For starters, well, this is on the part of the you love, of course, news. But the Kherson Oblast's occupational government governor, Saldo, and it doesn't matter that they don't have Kherson anymore, it doesn't matter anything like that. He announced recently that Russia intends, together with the occupational administration, to build a new city there. Yeah, because in an area with railway and logistics chains and everything, and I posted this on Twitter and I had a nice little response from someone who said, you know, we'll build our own Kherson with hookers, and blackjack, and stuff like that. It's just obviously stupid. But I guess they do this because of how Russia works. Also in the news is that, well, if you watch Perun, who's also really busy, I'm trying to reach him with my emails, and please poke him in YouTube comments, because he's the one Australian I really want to talk to. He recently made an episode about Franjo, the phenomenon that everyone on this show already know about the consistent lying. And we have evidence about the happenings of that recently since, you know, they're building this defensive line, Russians, which, by the way, Igor Girkin, who has returned from the front lines, deems as completely inefficient and a way how to lose the war very quickly. But no matter what, they're building this, and they're building these, like, defensive fortifications, but they're not really very good. Because in this whole Raspustitsa, where, you know, it's hard to get proper soil, we have documented evidence that, at least in a few cases, the local Russian soldiers who were building this so-called defensive line, yeah, they just packed the sandbags with snow and photoed them and just passed them on as, yeah, sure, we have some defensive measures on the spot. Now, obviously, anything packed with snow will not protect you one bit from any shrapnel or grenade, but that's happening. I mean, I remember that I told you about the whole weird event with the guys shooting other people, you know, in the bar, in the Kherson, before this. But yeah, it's Pokazuha. Pokazuha, or Potemkin's village replacement, or anything like that. This is happening extensively. At the same time, there have been strikes against Wagner Group, and against their fortified positions, and Wagner Group's experiencing casualties. And lately, apparently, this has happened because Prigozhin's own son has posted their locations on TikTok because he also wants to show off. So, I don't even know. I think there's some sort of apathy there on the Russian side, because apparently, according to latest reports, even Putin had to come out and state that a lot of Russian elected clerks and officials should probably cut down on the booze, since, well, alcoholism has reached massive widespread levels among the Russian administration. Which is also another fun and interesting consequence of this whole war. But this whole Prigozhin activity just marks one interesting thing that a lot of commentators have been being active about, and I'll get to this because I have a special section for our Don Don Buddy Ramzan Kadyrov here. See, I'm a political scientist by my education as well. You know, I took Western philosophy with specialization in political philosophy. That's one of my master's degrees. And yeah, one of the more influential philosophers that talk about what the state is and what a government is Max Weber. And he always stated that the number one issue that the state has is the control of state monopoly on violence, legitimate violence. As much as we like it or don't like it, it's the way it is. I mean, you have to enforce the laws, you have to enforce the collective deal theory and everything. It's a complex issue, but the state monopoly on violence, which admittedly is under the hood of every government, yeah, this has been being destroyed in Russia by a long time. And as an example, you know, I've been talking about Russia being maybe split apart and stopped existing after this war as a consequence of this war. But if we look at the institutions of the Russian government, it's been outdone already. I mean, I think the marking point really was that horrible illegal execution by Wagner troops with the sledgehammer. And now such things are apparently more widespread and everything's happening like that. We recently got a report from a Wagner Group escapee who wasn't a prisoner, who wasn't one of those recruited prisoners, who was just in the Wagner Group, who apparently was tortured by Wagner Group because they had some leaks, and someone talked to journalists, and they found a guy to blame this on, and he was put in the Kishka, which is basically a well. It's a very short well, but you can't neither kneel down nor sit down. Earth was thrown upon him. He was forced to face a wall with his eyes like blindfolded, and a gun was blasted near his head. He was beaten. He was electrocuted. He was all humiliated and tortured for a long time. Now he's back in Russia because he was kidnapped, and all the while it was because he apparently had so the guys thought in the Wagner Group that he had spoken to journalists. I won't go into more details describing tortures here because, you know, after so many episodes about the war and more historical episodes, I've gone into a lot of descriptions of torture, but yeah. They're just doing torture all over the place and they're not even ashamed of it. They are just taking violence into their own hands. And even Girkin states that these private warfare groups and so-called national regiments are doing more harm than good in the long run, because even Girkin now states that the whole war, if it's going as it is, is a bit of a danger of existing existence of Russia as a unified single government. But the thing that shocked me the most is what Ramzan Kadyrov did. Because, you know, we've been mentioning Ramzan Kadyrov for a while on this show and in his various weird random actions, but what Ramzan Kadyrov managed to do this time truly shows that the monopoly on violence is gone in Russia, and that it might as well slowly turn into some sort of group of warlords just fighting for power. Because Putin and his bunker, yeah, I don't even know how much of an authority he really is for the people who really, на местах, on the spot, would have some actual power. You see, I'll start with the beginning here. Late on December the 11th, Chechen special forces raided the Republic's Urus-Martan district, looking for eyewitnesses who had failed to intervene in a clash between two law enforcement officers the day before. The state-owned Chechen broadcaster Grozny reported that over 500 law enforcement troops had, quote-unquote, concentrated in Urus-Martan. This was also confirmed by Idris Chernikov, head of the Chechen traffic police. The newly arrived troops were stopping drivers and checking their documents. According to the Chechen opposition telegram channel Nisyo, around 20 people had been arrested by 4 a.m. on December the 12th. Nisyo also claims that the troops had smashed the tinted windows in some vehicles. The raid was precipitated by a violent clash that took place on December the 10th between an Urus-Martan traffic policeman and another law enforcement officer identified as a National Guard serviceman or possibly a member of its reserve. Baza reports that a National Guard officer drove up to the traffic policeman, drifting in front of him and trying to challenge him, quote-unquote, over some unresolved past issue. As the conflict escalated, he slapped the policeman's face. The latter, in turn, fired several shots into the ground. None of the locals present in the scene tried to intervene, writes Baza. According to the insider, however, some of the onlookers tried to defend the National Guard officer. The telegram channel Nisyo wrote that other National Guard troops soon arrived on the scene and drove off with the policeman in an unknown direction. The Chechen traffic police told RIA Novosti that locals, quote, responded aggressively to the Urus-Martan traffic police's insistence on enforcing the traffic rules, end quote, adding that the main culprits had been arrested on December the 10th. Now, this is weird, but this is normal because, again, this whole situation, this whole country, the failed state known as Russia, is coming apart as a house of cards. But the day after the incident, Chechen's head, Ramzan Kadyrov, published a video addressing Urus-Martan residents in Chechen about their behavior when gathered around the officers. According to a translation published by Grozny Inform, Kadyrov rebuked and threatened the residents with being sent to fight in Ukraine. Quote, "All of you who took part in this, do you really want to squabble and fight? You'll have that opportunity. I'm giving an order to send members of the Chechen Special Forces to Urus-Martan tomorrow morning. You'll have a choice, either fight with them, or we'll send you to the Special Military Operations Zone. Prove that you really are men." Idris Chernigov, head of the Chechen Traffic Police, said that raids will continue in Urus-Martan until everyone who took part in that incident is caught and until they learn to respect the officers as well as the traffic rules. Now, this is especially interesting since Ramzan Kadyrov constantly claims that, you know, all the Chechen troops are totally busy fighting all the time in the front lines in Ukraine, and that he personally is always there, and that, you know, that's why he didn't really participate in the mobilization effort. If you remember parts about that, where Chechnya was exempt from the mobilization, since Ramzan Kadyrov claimed that there's enough Chechens on the front lines of Ukraine already. Now, how is that if he has whole squadrons of special forces units just sent out there to horrify a peaceful city, a peaceful district? It's just nothing, and nothing's going to happen to him. And as far as I've talked to people about this whole situation, yeah, the Wagner Group troops and the Chechens and everyone, they're just acting as if they have like a blank check to do whatever they want. This isn't normal, and this shouldn't be happening, but this is just some sort of warlord violence already happening. And I thought, you know, the troubles, as I call them, would happen later. But no, they're happening right now as I make this episode. There is no centralized power anymore. Putin's not that much in control over anything, apparently. So this is a bit strange. A bit scary, yes, but if you would look at Russia and ask, you know, who has some power about some things, there wouldn't be any single answer anymore. And on another note, I've been talking to some very pro-Russian guys who always claim about the evil West that's going to come and destroy Russia and everything. But is this the Russia that people actually fight for? I mean, do you want Russia where, you know, someone can just be slaughtered with a sledgehammer and nothing's going to happen to the perpetrator? Or some sort of a local governor can just terrorize a whole district for things that he personally didn't like without any repercussions, without any due process? And Zagran Atrads, the guys who just shoot Bobolas in the back and everything, that's still going on. I mean, any thoughts about Russia gathering stuff together and everything like that, this seems to evaporate by the moment. This is also the most interesting stuff that's happening right now because, again, on the Russian side, Girkin or other analysts really understand Ukrainian methods right now. But as far as we know, Ukrainians are getting a Patriot missile system, so that's going to improve their air defense capabilities, which means that pretty soon we might actually see some more progress and action on the whole front and everything. All in all, yeah, this war has taken a lot from me, but also it just shows some sort of a chronicle of how countries can devolve from inside. Because no matter even if Russia wins this war, this just shows, in my opinion, and my opinion as an expert here, and I don't like to call myself an expert, but I'm among the most educated people in this matter. If you look at these whole events, the sledgehammer, the Wagner group, the Prigozhin activities, and what Kadyrov is doing right now, just so seems that no matter if Russia wins or loses, now it doesn't even matter if they win, and what is a win for them anyways, the process of collapse has already started. And I'm not really sure if anyone can do anything to turn that bomb back again. But that's it for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll be updating you with more news as they come out. Thank you to all our patrons. And if you want to support the show, please become our patron on patreon.com/theeasternborder. One-time donations are appreciated. We're collecting because we're going to go back to Ukraine in January at some point, as soon as, you know, I get information that something interesting is going to happen there. So if you want to support the show that way, please go to theeasternborder.lv and click the donate button. We're continuing on with our work as best as we can. So, до свидания, товарищи. And as always, remember, happiness is mandatory.